Interestingly, I was on the morning show, as a number of you commented that I'd taken over the airways entirely on Thursday, Friday. I went from the afternoon to the morning show.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke to Tonya Khoury, who does this like sentiment analysis. And she was saying that in social media, the issue of land has been like 28% of all discussions on social media and non-social media. So South Africans are talking about it. We've had all of these hearings all over the country, all these written submissions, you know, and this is something that gets people really, really excited and over the top. So I thought we'd bring on an expert, discuss the land issue, understand what's going on, and get a bit of a perspective. And some guys who've been really active on this issue have been Institute of Race Relations. And so we have Marius Root on. He's one of their campaign managers, and he's going to be talking to us about the issue. Marius, welcome to Chai FM. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
So first of all, perhaps you can start by telling us what the process looks like at the moment. Because, you know, we have Cyril saying that the ANC is definitely going to vote for it. They've had all of these public hearings. There's written submissions going all over the place. Do they need two-thirds? What is the actual process of where we're at when it comes to the land issue at the moment?
Well, the ANC has complicated matters by, or Cyril Ramaphosa has complicated matters by announcing that the ANC will be supporting expropriation without compensation before the end of the public commentary process. So as with the ANC's whole stance on the land issue, it's quite confusing, and nobody actually knows what's going to happen. So it does seem to be, does seem that the ANC has already decided that this is what will happen, but who knows what will actually happen once the constitutional committee that's working on this matter comes to its conclusions. Apparently, there was a report over the weekend that the ANC was now concerned because most of the written submissions they were made to Parliament were against expropriation without compensation, and the party is apparently looking at ways to extend the window for written submissions so it can encourage its supporters to give written submissions. But it's not clear if this will be allowed or what the process would be.
Okay, but ANC aside, you know, we're talking about a constitutional amendment. We're talking about, you know, something, a process in Parliament. It's a big deal. I don't think it's really happened all that much since the end of apartheid, the beginning of the new South Africa. There's been some small changes to the constitution, but nothing this size. So what does that process look like? That committee, let's say they come out and they say what the ANC says they want, which is to change the constitution. How does that vote work? How does that process work? Because I've seen some commentators saying that there's no way that this thing can get passed before the election. I mean, does that sound likely to you?
Well, it's difficult to say. We've obviously never had something. The constitution has been changed actually quite a few times since it was promulgated in 1996, but obviously nothing of this nature. But as far as I understand it, this is part of the Bill of Rights, so it would take 75% actually of Parliament to support this change. So it's not clear if it will be able to be done before the election. It will probably be held in May next year.
So, I mean, that's another then a key question, right? So in order to change the constitution, normally you need a two-thirds majority. The ANC doesn't have a two-thirds, as far as I know. And would require the support of the EFF to get some sort of amendment through. But you're saying that it could even be more than that. And the question is, would they have enough support in Parliament to make a change?
As it's all, the ANC at the moment by itself doesn't have two-thirds, but with the support of the EFF, it would have. But this is something I just have to check. But if it is a three-quarters majority that would be needed, then I think it'd be very a close-up thing. Because the DA would oppose this motion. They've got about 22% of votes in Parliament. The Freedom Front Plus would oppose it. They've got about 1%. COPE would oppose it. They've got about 0.5% of the seats in Parliament, and the ACDP would oppose it too, as far as I know, which would be 1%. So it's very close to 25% they would need it to stop a change to the Bill of Rights. But that's something I'd have to check, because I'm not sure if changing Section 25 would be part of that.
Now, you guys at the Institute of Race Relations have been pretty opposed to this issue of particularly changing the constitution and just general the expropriation without compensation. Now, this issue, you know, tends to excite people remarkably badly. And all sorts of motives get, get imputed to people. We have people saying that there's a white genocide, and we have other people to say, you know, we're doing a Venezuela. And I don't know if it's always very helpful in the way that people describe the process. So from your guys' perspective, why is it that you oppose this change? What are you seeking, and what are you seeking to see?
Well, property rights are the cornerstone of any prosperous society. We've seen what happened in Venezuela and Zimbabwe when property rights were first eroded. Then it didn't take very long for other rights to be eroded, and they were meddling in elections and all that kind of thing. But that said, we at the Institute are not opposed to land reform at all. We are just opposed to seizing people's property without compensation and getting rid of things like title deeds. We've suggested a number of ways where land reform could happen, and we certainly support land reform. Just we don't think it should be done in a way that damages the property rights section of the Constitution.
Now, there have been a lot of people, if you look at some of these hearings that have been taking place, people saying, look, you know, white people took the land, there was no process there before, they didn't pay for it, that land was stolen. So why should we worry too much about how it gets redistributed and that people need the land in order to do it? What is your position on those sorts of arguments?
Well, it's all quite complex because if you look at the history of South Africa, we can't deny that some land was stolen and some people were forcibly taken off their land. But at the same time, some land was bought legally, some land was the white settlers were allowed to settle on land following negotiations with the person who'd be the local chief of the area. King Mswati himself came out recently and said that he agreed with people who said that white settlers around Swaziland had been given permission to settle on that land. So it's all it's quite a complex discussion, and it's also we need to decide, do we punish people for the sins of their ancestors? And I think in any civilized society, that's not a path we want to go down.
Now, one of the things that we've seen at the hearings, you see a lot of these videos going around, people sort of making sort of very aggressive, racialistic discussion points when they're, you know, let's call it the Andile Nkutama school of public speaking. Lots of really aggressive stuff. You guys at the Institute have said that you don't believe that South Africa and ordinary South Africans are actually necessarily as racist as you would believe on Twitter or from the EFF members of the EFF or what's it, Black First, Land First, etc. Is that a position that you guys still maintain?
Well, our surveys have shown that race relations are pretty sound in South Africa. Most South Africans, regardless of their color, want to work together. But what our surveys have shown that the trend is a negative one. And although the majority of South Africans still can't be described as racist, the proportion of people who do purport racist views, while small, is growing. And we do think this is possibly because of growing racial rhetoric from public figures, certain politicians. And I do think We do see people have spats on Twitter and so on, but I mean, I think we must all remember that Twitter isn't real life, and I think all of us who can, or most people, if they think about interactions with people of different races in their personal lives, would agree that in general, people get on pretty well with each other in this country.
We're chatting to Marius Rutte on the show today. He is from the Institute of Race Relations, talking about the land issue, where it's at, what's going on. If you want to have any questions for Marius, please, by all means, you can telegram us 0618951019. That's our telegram number. SMS us 34519. You can tweet us at Chaifem or email us on air at chaifem.com. If you have any questions, comments on the land thing, let us know, and we'll be happy to take them. Maurice, the other sort of, let's call it controversial piece of polling that you guys have done suggests that you believe that land is actually not that important for most South Africans. And I feel like a lot of people would find that sometimes hard to believe.
I think we've been a bit misinterpreted there, because we haven't said that land isn't an important issue for South Africans. What we've said, what our question was, we asked people what should the government's priorities be, and land reform was flagged as one of the lowest priorities that people thought education and the issue of jobs generally came up as the most important issues. So it doesn't mean to say that people don't think land reform is important. They just don't think it should be one of the government's priorities. And at the same time, even if people do think land reform is important, this doesn't necessarily mean they support expropriation without compensation.
So what are the alternatives that the Institute is putting forward as alternative ideas in terms of land reform to speed it up or to do it properly, so to speak?
Well, what we have suggested is firstly looking at people who live in urban areas and giving people title in those areas. Returning to the land is not really feasible for a country like South Africa. I mean, about two-thirds of South Africans now live in cities, and development is urban-based in general around the world. But also, most research shows that urbanization is the key to generally escaping poverty and finding a job. But what we have suggested is, if we do want to create a class of emerging black farmers, what we could do is sell entities such as SAA and so on and privatize state-owned corporations. Last year alone, the SAA was bailed out to the tune of about 20 billion rand, and we've estimated that it would cost around about 20 million rand to set up an emerging black farmer with a decent-sized farm, with everything that he would need to run a farm, from a bucky to tractors to cattle and so on, and that would cost, as I say, around about between 10 and 20 million rand. So if we could, we can make some changes in the budget, and this could fund land reforms. And one of our, what we think is low-hanging fruit, is stopping to bail out expensive SOEs like SAA.
Okay, well, very, very interesting. If people want to read more about what you guys are writing, they can go to the Institute of Race Relations website.
Yeah, I can go to irr.org.za, and all what we've written on this issue and a lot of other issues is available for download on there.
Thank you so much, Marius Ruut there from the Institute for Race Relations, giving us their perspective on the land debate.